Let's make it happen, Captain!
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag, and today we have a pufferfish looking at you.
Yeah, it's kind of cute and creepy at the exact same time.
That's kind of like the Forever Lonely guy, almost, Reddit. You ever seen that cartoon? No?
No. Right.
Okay, well, there you go.
I'm not too much of a frequenter of Reddit, unfortunately.
Well, then it's lost all its momentum now. Let's start the show. All right, from Mario. And as you can see here, we're catching up from the holidays. From Mario, I got a new Dell XPS 12 for Christmas. So far, I'm absolutely loving Windows 8 on touchscreen. Unfortunately, I have a problem with the system, which is driving me nuts. After using the system for a few hours, a fan kicks in, and I notice a spike in CPU usage. This happens even if the system is idle. Looking at the task manager, I see a process called boot configuration data editor, which is using 45% of the CPU. What's worse, this process cannot be killed and will even prevent my system from shutting down cleanly. The only option I have at this point is to force a shutdown. Any ideas what's going on? See the attached image from Task Manager.
So I've asked for a better picture from Task Manager. Unfortunately, the main picture from Task Manager, I'll pull this up right now. This picture is only a little bit useful for me, and I think I've even added some columns here. What I really like is the details, because I want to see what the actual process name is.
So we're still going back and forth on this
one. Still going back and forth. Let's just talk about that, how to diagnose that particular problem. If it's BCD...
Well, first of all, what is the boot configuration data editor?
Well, that's why I wanted to see the details tab, because a lot of things can name themselves whatever they want.
Yeah.
I want to actually see the XE name. Mm-hmm. If it is BCD edit, which is a command line tool in order to edit your boot configuration, it's kind of odd that it would be running, mm-hmm. and worse yet, that it would be taking up high amounts of CPU. So I'm kind of wondering what's going on. Has a task been kicked off? What's been installed on that machine such that it's even it's running? It should not be running, basically, is what I'm trying to get at.
And for a new machine, that seems kind of strange, too.
Yeah, I mean, for an OEM pre-install, frankly, I don't know what's going on all of them anymore. I mean, they're just not as clean as I would ever want them to be. Mm-hmm. In order to diagnose that, right, what I'd go look at is, what its command line options are. So I don't know if I've done it on this machine. No, I haven't. You can right-click here and say select columns in the details view and go all the way down to the bottom and click on command line and image file path. And what that'll do is add these two columns. It'll tell you from which location that XE is running from and its command line args. So that would actually help a lot in figuring out, what is this XE? Is it our XE? It kind of sounds like it is, mm-hmm. but I can't be certain.
Yeah.
And what its command line args are to figure out what's going on. The other thing to do is while it is taking up large amounts of CPU, what you can do is right-click on it, say, create dump file. Mm-hmm. Send me the dump file.
Okay.
And that will... Actually, the best thing to do, send me two dump files. Send me one where it is running high, wait about 2-3 minutes, send me another dump. It'll tell me transition states, what's going on.
All right.
The other thing to do, get the perf tools. We've talked about them before. You can diagnose perf issues that way. But, these are just some, quick, easy ways of figuring out what's going on.
Okay, and we'll keep you informed on what goes on there. From Vladimir, he says, I have a problem. The sound on my 64-bit version of Windows 8 Professional suddenly stops working. I have an Acer Aspire 5739G notebook, which has the Realtek ALC8880S onboard audio. I also have a Line 6 Pod Studio UX2 external interface. My guitar and headphone are connected to the audio interface. 3,000 words later, can you help me solve my problem?
Wait, what's the problem?
So the problem...
All you told me is that he has some hardware plugged in.
He plugs his hardware in, his audio card quits working. Well, I happen to have some Line 6 hardware myself. Phenomenal hardware. And what mine is, I use the, Guitar Works or something like that. Mm-hmm. Comes with a gearbox, effects processor. It's a phenomenal interface for playing guitar through a PC.
Okay.
And what it lets me do is I plug my guitar into this box, and it uses a PC, I think, as a processor. Most of these devices that you plug a guitar into a computer, you end up with just a little bit of delay. It's just enough to screw up someone who likes to play guitar, mm-hmm. especially fast. Mm-hmm. But this device doesn't do that, and it offloads somehow all the processing onto this box, and you can't even listen to the output from this onto your computer. Mm-hmm. You plug into the box, the external box, mm-hmm. and you hear it there.
Which is why it has a headphone interface.
Exactly. And the really weird thing is I've never been able to figure out why exactly when I plug this device into my computer it makes my sound card quit working. Mm-hmm. So this is a question for Line 6. I'm going to write them and find out what's going on here, why it actually does that, and what you should do ultimately in the best case scenario to make it work, or can you even make it work. But I think this is by design that they have it like this. But I'll check into this. I have the same thing. I have the same problem. I feel your pain. I know what you're talking about. But that's how it works. That's how the device works. So
I guess the only way to
work. And as soon as you unplug the device,
right.
your sound card starts working again. Mm-hmm. So, or at least it should. So I'll get in touch with Line 6 because I'd like to talk to them anyway. But that's the problem there, and we'll follow up on that next time. From Guarev, he says, I was trying to uninstall Norton Ghost 15 from program and features in Windows 7. During the uninstall process, I got an error, failed to have success running uninstall driver function in MSI uninstall driver function, and rolled back occurred. I just cannot read this small text. All right, so I checked the event source was MSI installer, and then I gathered MSI log file this failure uninstallation. I was trying to analyze the MSI log, but it was showing two instances of return value 3. Moreover, I was not able to figure out what component caused this failure. How can I fix this problem? I attach MSI log file, which we went back and forth about the benefits and drawbacks to RAR, to which Gove schooled me. So, Gove.
I'm just tired of formats where you can't just open them up by default or just have, you know, a quick...
I was just surprised that you didn't have WinRAR already installed.
No, I have very little installed on this machine.
It's, yeah, lean and mean.
Yeah, well, that and I usually TS into my other boxes from this one because it only has a 32 gig SSD. Not a lot of room. I don't want to get it full. So anyways, here's the MSI log file. Let's make it a wee bit larger.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's quite large there, isn't it? Okay. So what it is complaining about, this return value 3 is just a hint when there is a fatal error in an MSI install, uninstall, some sort of action. If you look for a return value 3, you can usually find what's the cause. So I wanted to... There's a couple of return errors here. Let's go to the first one. And as the person noted, there's a problem uninstalling a driver, failed to have success running uninstall driver function, which is interesting verbiage, to say the least. Anyways, in order to find which driver it is that's causing this, there's a couple of different things that you can do. I like using this tool, Verifier. Comes with the OS. I just want to get a listing of all of the currently loaded drivers on the system. So I'm going through a bunch of steps here just to get me a list of all the drivers. So what you want to do here is sort by the provider, and what you can do then is figure out which one is from Norton or Symantec, depending on how they've branded their driver. From there you can find the driver name, and then from there go to regedit, assuming I spelt it correctly. Then go to HKLM system, current control set, services, find the service name in here, whatever it may be, and you usually get it. It usually matches up with the file name minus the .sys. So you do that. Let's say I picked hid serve. Take start type, set it to 4. Reboot the system. The driver is now disabled, so it shouldn't have any problems with that driver uninstalling it. Then rerun the uninstaller.
Okay.
That still doesn't work. Norton's and Symantec usually have specific uninstaller exes that will go and clean out your system. You can go through that process as well. Wanted to go through both with you. I like this method sometimes a little bit more because I can selectively disable problematic drivers.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right. Next question from SJ says, I installed Mouse Without Borders on both my machines. One's running XP and the other Windows 7. I've entered the security code on both machines and click link, but I keep getting an error. What can I do to fix this problem? Well, the first thing you should do, send me the error that you're getting so that I can troubleshoot that. But I did talk to Trong, who wrote Mouse Without Borders here at Microsoft. And he said, hey, Larry, a few users have the same issue when they're running different versions of the app in their machines. There might be some networking firewall problems. This is a checklist to diagnose. Checklist. Number one, run the same latest version on all machines. So download the latest version off the website. Two, use TCP protocol. Three, bind to the right network. Four, review all options in the settings form. Five, check firewall network connection. And six, connect all machines' devices to the same domain and network. So make sure you've got all those. And if you still have problems, send me a screenshot of the error that you're getting, and we'll take it from there. But that should be a good first place to start. There you go. Whatever. All right. From Eduardo again. And is this the same Eduardo?
Could be.
Okay. All right. I think we were talking about this earlier. All right. When I start Windows, while I do not open IE10 and access a Hotmail site for the Outlook site, both my Windows Live Mail client and my Windows Live Messenger are unable to access the internet. No matter what I do, they do not log on. As soon as I start IE10 and access one of the sites above, even if I immediately shut down IE, both programs are able to log in. Any idea what's going on here? I have a fiber optic direct connection running at 100 megabit.
I know. Isn't that sweet? I don't have that.
Must be nice.
Yeah. That would be very cool. We desperately need more speed in the States here. Anyways, we went back and forth trying to figure out what kind of interesting connection this was. Turned out that it was the equivalent of a dial-up networking connection, except, of course, it's not over a 56K modem.
Yeah.
So if you go to Internet Options and you go to Connections, you get this screen.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to do is say, always dial my default connection, and then you set your default connection to be whatever is listed here.
Okay.
And Eduardo had his ISP provider's connection already set up. Just need to set that as default, and then from there, everything would be fine. That was basically, what we had to do to go through and figure out why his RAS connection, his dial-up networking connection, did not connect.
Okay.
But relatively simple, but we had to go through a fair bit of communication to actually figure it out.
Well, there you have it. All right, next question. After a hard drive failure, I decided to begin backing up my data. That's the worst time to start doing backups. Been looking around for a backup solution. I have access to two, Norton 360 solution, Windows Tools, specifically the Windows 7 backup. I have a question about the latter. When I set it up for the first time, it took a great amount of time to complete, talking about more than 10 hours for just 300 gig. My backup choices were user libraries, C drive, system image. I also set to run on a daily basis. What I want to know is, will it take the same amount of time the next scheduled backup, or will it just complete the existing backup, making the process quicker?
What he's really asking for is whether or not it's a differencing disk, differencing backup or not.
This is going to take forever every night. It's a 10-hour process every night.
It should not be a 10-hour process every night. However, that being said, while the Windows backup solution comes with the OS and it does a relatively decent job, there are numerous other third-party solutions that give you additional flexibility, like where you can back up to, how you do the recovery, just a lot more options. The Windows backup solution is sufficient. I'll definitely give you that. It's sufficient. But it does not give you the flexibility that one might actually want to go for. Yeah. Certainly doesn't give me the flexibility that I usually go for. But then again, my backup solution is much more distributed. Mm-hmm. So I've got scripts that will run that will back up my critical data. I never back up the OS itself. I don't care about the OS.
Yeah.
It takes me 15 minutes to install the OS, so I don't care at all. Mm-hmm. I just care about, you know, things that are already, you know, with Windows 8 already backed up. Favorites, you know, documents. I do everything to the, or most things to the cloud.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, my backups are based on scripts with full files in multiple locations.
We should devote an entire show to your backup process sometime.
My backup process is interesting with how many machines that I've got in the house. It's because I'll have, you know, multiple machines. I'm testing different machines.
Yeah.
So if I pick up a machine, I want to, you know, have everything that, all my data there, where, whichever machine I'm using. Mm-hmm. So, yes, having those kind of scripts that are syncing all the time is interesting. And always backing up to SkyDrive and then getting SkyDrive to sync back with the machine.
Cool. Okay. All right. I want to share particular printers, documents, and photos between two computers, an original running Windows Vista and connected to a router by cable, and a second computer running Windows 8 connected wirelessly. Both are accessing the internet and emails, but will not share devices and files, although set to do so. The printer is a Dell V305. Had read that cannot use Homegroup with Vista.
I believe, yeah, Homegroup came with Win 7.
Yeah.
I'd go low-tech on this one. So you hook up the printer to the Vista wired machine. You install the printer on it.
Mm-hmm.
You go to, let's see, control panel, print devices and printers. Do I have any installed on this one? We shall see. Yeah, okay, well, let's say I had one connected here. Right-click, properties. I don't know if I can actually share that one. I can't share that one. If I had a physical printer, you can share out that printer.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to make sure of on your Vista machine and your Win8 machine that you're using the same local username.
Yeah.
So, you know, create a new local user, call it test, call it printer share, whatever. And what you want to do is on your Windows 8 machine, connect to your Vista machine with that username. And what you can do is, if you go type in control kmgr.dll, you get this. You go to Windows credentials. This is if you're logged into, say, Foo user and
yeah.
you want to connect to another computer with the print user.
Yeah.
You add a Windows credential. You you know, put in the name of the computer, your Vista machine. So mm-hmm. let's call, you know, Vista. And username, you want it to be print user. And backslash for this is a local user.
Mm-hmm.
You put in, you know, foobar as the password, whatever
yeah.
password is. You click OK. That means you've now saved this user's credentials. So when you connect to the Vista machine, it'll use these credentials to connect to it. Should be able to access the printer. On your Vista machine, you want to make sure that file and printer sharing is enabled. So you go here, firewall. So if I wanted to change settings, you have to make sure that click file and printer sharing is enabled for private. Don't enable it for public.
Yeah.
You're probably not on a domain, so this column won't show up.
Mm-hmm.
So enable file and printer sharing on your Vista machine. That'll allow the ports to go through. Your printer should be shared, and you should be able to connect without an issue.
Cool. All right, we are at Pick of the Week time. And the Pick of the Week this week is an interesting one on 3D printers. So this week there was a dress that was 3D printed, which was kind of interesting. Normally when you think of 3D printers, you're thinking of like hard plastic, you know, kind of rough cut kind of things. You don't really think of like 3D clothes.
No.
So this was kind of interesting, and I believe the printer that this was done on was an Objet, which is a really interesting printer. It has one of their printers anyway. It's under $20,000. It has 7 different materials that you can print with, and they have 107 different materials that you can get for the printer, which is really interesting. They have some examples on their website that I'll link to that have like. They have transparent materials, so they can print a wine glass. They have like rubbery materials. Mm-hmm. I believe this is what MSR uses to prototype things like a mouse, where you'll have like a hard plastic shell with kind of a rubberized part to rest your thumb on or the buttons and stuff like that. Right. So they can print those out and check them out, see how they feel. It's a really cool way to do rapid prototyping.
That's not rapid. That's like insanely fast prototyping.
Yeah, although I'm sure that mouse speed. Probably takes like, you know, 7 hours to print out or something like that. So
yeah, but still,
still more rapid than in the past.
Well, yeah, I mean, you'd either have to, you know, carve it yourself out of wood, you know, or a clay and then bake it or whatever. Or you have to, you know, outsource it. You have to go order it. And, you know, that kind of back and forth would be really, really slow.
Yeah, so the Objet printer, very cool, interesting, under $20,000, 7 different types of material, and this is one of the things that you can...
I wonder how flexible it is, though.
Yeah, I'd like to see what that actually feels like. Is it the most scratchy material that you've ever put on that you'd
would
never
you,
really
want Would
you
want,
wear?
Like, a dress made of graphene or something?
That graphene would be cool, although I don't think it would look very good on this body.
But see you in a dress.
Graphene, for those who don't know, graphene is an incredibly strong material. Is it nanoparticle? Is that how they make it? Is it like some kind of nano process?
They grow it, as far as I understand.
Yeah, and it's very difficult. They can't make it in big quantities yet, but for graphene, it would take an elephant balancing on a pencil to break a piece of graphene that's as thick as saran wrap. So that's... Pretty tough material.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of interesting. Another one that I wanted to talk about was the M-Core 3D printer. And if you look at this site, there's some interesting things that you can print out with this device. You see a skull here. You see a building that looks like a photo, but it's not. It's an actual 3D model of a building. And then you have a guy here whose head, they scan his head, and then they hit print, and they print out a little version of his head. And you can watch a video of that. I don't know what that material is. It looks kind of like a styrofoam almost. So
the thing that's really looking interesting to me is the color.
Yeah, it's 3D color printer, which is very interesting.
That is just insane.
It is, yeah. Looks very cool. I want to do this. I want to play with one of those printers so bad.
You know what I want to make out of that?
Oh, I can't imagine.
My little bobblehead.
Is it appropriate?
My little bobblehead.
Oh, yeah, that would be good. A little go bobblehead. So the other interesting thing with this is the printer that they're rolling out to Staples all over the place so that you can actually send your print job into Staples and then go pick it up locally. So that seems to be the method in the future. I would say 3D printers are probably going to be similar to photo printers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you probably have one at home, and you might do some rough stuff on that, but it's not really high quality and the type of thing that you'd want to keep forever. But if you send your print job out to a place that has a better 3D printer, you can get better quality, different materials and stuff like that, and then you actually go out. So I think it'd probably be a lot like printing photos in the future.
It'd be the first time ever that there's a line wrapping around Staples.
Yeah. Well, he said it, not me. So the other thing that I wanted to suggest here is I'm going to bring on Clint Ruckus to talk about 3D printers sometime in the future for a pick of the week. So if you have any questions about 3D printers, you want to know, like, the real story. Is it time to jump in? Should I wait? What are the printers I should look at? What are the pros, the cons, the drawbacks, stuff like that? Ask your questions now, and we'll bring Clint on, who uses 3D printers all the time.
Does he use, like, MakerBot?
He's got a MakerBot in his office, and he goes over to MSR all the time to use their stuff. So he's always making something. But, yeah, send your questions. And we'll ask Clint on an upcoming show. So that's the show for this week. If you have questions, you can write us at defrag@microsoft.com, defragshow@microsoft.com. We'll get either one. And you can leave a comment in the show notes or in the show forum, and we'll get back to you there. We prefer the email, so Gove can go back and forth with you in the middle of the night. See you next week.
Take care.